Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. Peter Wallace here with Reverend Dr. Steve A. Martin, who I call Sam, as many of his friends do. Sam is on the Board of Trustees, the chair of the board of the Presbyterian Church Foundation. He has been a pastor. He's been a seminary educator. He is a principal in Martin Frankel Associates, a consulting firm he founded in 1979. And that's just a few of his many achievements. Sam, welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
You've had an extensive experience, as I've mentioned. What prompted you to make the changes in your career over the years from pastoring to education and now consulting? Were you led or pushed?
John Calvin indicates in his section in the Institutes on our call, our voca, that we can discern our call in the opportunities that a kind providence puts in front of us. And I've just had unusual opportunities. But in a strange kind of way, each career has prepared me for the one that followed it. And to this day, even at my ripe age, I'm not sure but what I might yet do something strange and unusual. It's all a matter of learning and enjoying the journey.
I'm fascinated by your consulting work with your firm, Martin Frankel. Explain again the goals of your firm.
We typically help clients, major corporations primarily, and some small family held businesses in three fundamental areas. And one is identifying and training the next generation of leadership. It's being in the business world in this highly competitive time in life is a very difficult idea. And it's and interestingly enough, it's tougher to manage success than it is climbing the ladder to get there. We also help organizations with organizational kinds of issues. The world is changing so quickly. Technology changes. The market changes so quickly that very good organizations learn how to move in and out of partnerships on a mutually acceptable way. Because quite often they'll have an opportunity, but lack the skill to deliver on that opportunity. And so you're finding more and more companies that are willing to join together to do projects. And we help with that as we do with the acquisition and mergers. Acquisitions and mergers are typically driven by the finance people or by the marketing people who see some sort of synergy which may or may not materialize. But in any case, nobody deals with often who's going to run what piece of this until the thing is done. And it goes a lot easier if you get out in front of that. The third activity we do is something I stumbled into years ago, and it's called partnering. And it's a process in which you get the players in a major construction project together before you start to work on it to hammer out the business processes so you can avoid suing each other at the end of the day. And in that regard, we manage the reconstruction of the Dulles Airport and Reagan Washington National Airport and the stadium for the Jaguars in Jacksonville and other sorts of projects like that. And it's been really interesting and exciting to be engaged in that sort of work as well.
Another area that your firm is involved with in some to some extent is the area of ethics, corporate ethics. Would you explain why that's so important?
I'm afraid that a lot of people in business today are trained primarily in mathematical models. And for people who've not been exposed to a liberal arts education or to theology or philosophy, the assumption is that the only things that are real are realities that can be quantified and measured. And that's a very fundamentalist and limited way to look at the world. So what we have discovered is that it's probably more valuable to have training as a philosopher or a theologian if you're trying to create and think about a future that doesn't exist. I was once introduced in a high-tech company in the Boston area that we're here. I was facilitating a session on strategy, And the CEO said, we're here to think about the future, which of course doesn't exist. Fortunately, our consultant for this project used to be a professor in the theological seminary. He's accustomed to dealing with things that don't exist. And I took it as a compliment, which was the way he meant it. But the point is that there are many ways in which ethics impacts, of course, business. In dealing, there are three areas that a CEO cannot delegate: the strategy, he cannot delegate the key human resource issues, and she or he cannot really delegate the relationship to investors. And people who have a philosophic bent of mind and a theological bent of mind and understand those metaphors, as I say, look at the strategy as somewhat open-ended. In human resources, they look at it, they really believe that the golden rule is good business. But others will talk about efficiency models. You'll hear words like human capital. Mm-hmm. And what they mean by that is lowest cost input, highest value output. That's mm-hmm. the way they think about people, if they're fundamentalist in this materialist way. And about investor relations, a lot of people who only come out of a business background or experience will look at that as packaging and marketing, how we look good in the eyes of investors. And people who have a deeper understanding of what they're about tend to want to find ways to describe the strategy in such succinct and clear ways that investors understand it and buy into it. But there is a great deal of pressure to ignore those more ethereal views. But our experience is it's to your detriment in a company.
You helped our organization, the Alliance for Christian Media, on whose board you serve, through the process of our own strategic planning. And I'm wondering how churches might benefit from that exercise.
Churches, in my judgment, need to be run in as efficient a way, and I mean that realistically. And the first thing you have to help a church do is understand the interface between three variables. One is the norms of the tradition. The second is the unique history and stories that are told around a particular congregation. And the third is the way in which the leadership of that congregation envisions the future based on its look at its norms, its unique gifts, history, and circumstances, and then to look at how that comes together in opportunities to serve. I'm convinced that the energy of the church in our day is primarily at the congregational level and not at the institutional level. Ecumenism, for example, has its difficulties at the national and international level, but it's quite alive among local churches and individual communities.
We were talking earlier personally about some of the issues that our various denominations are dealing with right now, some of which seem to be minor issues in the grand scheme of things. What would you say are the major issues the church should be wrestling with these days?
How to be faithful in a multicultural world. How to be faithful in an unbelieving world. Hmm. How to be faithful in a world in which the best lack all conviction and the worst are full of passionate intensity, to quote Yeats.
What insights could you offer our listeners on the process of wrestling through some of these major issues?
I was once asked by a student if I would recommend a good book on preaching. And I said, well, as I think about it, the book I would primarily recommend that you start with is the book of Psalms. Then from Psalms, I would go to Mark, and from Mark, I would probably go to Romans. And I still think that if one wants to hear God speak, one would be advised to go where the church has understood God to speak and not where one wants to listen. Hmm. And the witness has been that it is through Holy Writ, the Scripture, the accumulated wisdom of the believing community over thousands and thousands of years, that we're most apt to find our key to how we are to live and what it is we are to believe.
What would you say mainline pastors in general are doing right these days?
Nurturing mission at the local level.
Hmm.
Nowadays, there used to be a time 50, 40 years ago when you would send money to some denominational agency and it would send missionaries out in the name of the denomination. But because of communication and transportation, more and more churches are engaged in doing mission themselves. In our Presbyterian denomination, we were just amazed at the amount of money that was given for hurricane relief.
Mm-hmm.
And we were amazed at the number of congregations that have put together mission teams to go to Mississippi and Louisiana to work and to help rebuild communities. And I think that sort of mission is the most important thing in dealing with helping people grow in the faith and making a proper witness at the same time.
Dr. Sam Martin, thank you for talking with us.
Always good to be with you, Peter.